a discussion with the Office of the Inspecting Judge annual report. As you know that we had a briefing by the Inspecting Judge's office on the annual report. This document, and I hope that all of you are having the document with you. I want to welcome firstly the judge. It's the second time now that our new judge is with us in the meeting. Judge, you are most welcome into the committee, into Parliament. Then your delegation. Can we organize the seat so that we might say, And then, Mr. Gideon Morris with the team. I'm sure that you will introduce the team later on, Mr. Morris. And then members of Parliament. The last time, Judge, I must apologize. I've not introduced the members to you the last time. It's very much important that you know the members and get used to their faces and their names. We are having two apologies from our members. One, Nkosi Tolo is having a bereavement in the family, and then Mr. Kele is also from KwaZulu-Natal. He has also sent an apology. And then Mayor Winnie Ngwenya also sent an apology, said she's having other pressing issues. So that is the three apologies that we are having for today. But I think I must first deal with this issue. Thank you very much, Bishop, for reminding me. But you were in the meeting when we announced about the death of one of our brothers. Yeah, they were there, Bishop, when they did. But I think that let me address a matter and clarify a matter here that we raised in our last meeting about the tabling of this report, the annual report. I said in our last meeting with the judge and the office, it's a very serious matter, and I have said that I will ask Judge Erasmus to come and explain what happened to this report. And I have also said that I will ask the minister to be present. But in the meantime, there's clarity on the whole matter, and I think it's only proper to clarify the issue here in this meeting, where the judge and everybody is present. Yesterday, the minister called me, gave me a letter that clarifies the matter. This letter is from the Office of the Inspecting Judge. And I will read the letter. from the inspecting judge. Here Mrs. Munay has discussed this morning, transmitted herewith, please find the self-explanatory email message which was received from Mr. Lideko. Mr. Lideko, manager of the documentation section in Parliament, as well as the delivery note specifying that a total of 510 annual reports of the Judicial Inspectorate of Prison were delivered and signed by Parliament on the 19th June 2007. From the response received in Parliament, it is evident that the papers offered in Parliament as in not following standard procedure. After receiving the annual report, it seems that the error caused the delay in tabling the annual report. May I also respectfully request that your office proceed with informing Mr. Lideko to continue with the tabling of the report. Here is a letter from Mr. Lideko. Mr. Lideko is saying, "Dear Mr. Morris, let me take this opportunity first to apologize for our failure to communicate about the delivery of the Judicial Inspectorate annual report. The books were received in our stores and the officials failed to notify us about the receipt of the books. It is a standard procedure that when books are received, that the relevant department is notified and given copies to ensure the tabling of the document. The officials in the store failed to do this, and this should not have happened if they followed procedure. The annual report of your office is available, and it will be appreciated if you could facilitate the tabling. Mr. Lideko, Manager, Documentation Section." Members, I'm reading this to clarify the issue here. That not the minister's office, not the inspecting judge's office can be put in a box here, because we have said we want to find out what happened. And clearly, the people who is in at the center of this problem in Parliament, officials, they are saying itself, Mr. Lideko is saying, these books were received already in June, the 19th of June, and they have not done what they are supposed to be doing. Now, we can't leave as a portfolio committee. We can't leave this thing and say, no, sorry, we are apologizing. We must take it up. I will take it up on behalf of the committee with the relevant people, with the Speaker of Parliament, to say that this is not correct. It is not right that we are sitting. The office sends this book, and here's the book in front of, they are lying there, 510 copies. Members of Parliament were supposed to have these copies, and they are not. In the meantime, the minister have now officially tabled this report yesterday. The minister sent to me a letter yesterday to say it is my intention to table the Judicial Inspectorate of Prison's annual report for 2006-2007 financial year. I have accordingly instructed Parliament's Papers Office and the Office of the Inspecting Judge in this regard. Correspondence between the affected offices is attached for reference. So this is what Minister Balfour has done. I thought that also in an official meeting I must clarify this issue, because I raised it in a meeting and it is not both sides. Secretary have done their job. The minister on his side. We're waiting for this thing, and this thing we're there in the store. It's clear that it is Parliament, the officials, and I am going to ask the Speaker to take action. We must get the report back. What action are they going to take against these officials who have not taken Parliament seriously? You remember, with the justice, with the child bill, it was also a lot of confusion caused by some of the officials of Parliament. So members, I thought that let me explain this for yourself as a clarification, so that you must know what has happened. Now we are going to start now with the agenda for the meeting. But as I have said, you are welcome to grab a cup of coffee, tea, or whatever. Please, members. Judge, you know, we had a briefing on your document, and yesterday or on Tuesday, Cindy gave me a presentation. I don't know, Judge, do you want to take us again through this? I thought that we have now the briefing, and it's for the members of the committee now to interrogate this issue. I think that we can do it that way. I don't know what's in your mind, Judge. Maybe you can lead us on that.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, as you correctly point out, last week on Friday, at this meeting, we made a presentation of the current annual report of the Judicial Inspectorate of Prisons. So what happened last Friday was a mere representation of the report. Chairperson, you further will recall that last week there was not sufficient time for the members of this committee to interrogate the directorate on basis of the content of the report. The reason being that it had transpired during the course of the meeting last week on Friday that the members of this committee, as anybody else in Parliament, had received the report lately, and for that purpose, they were not in a position to properly interrogate the directorate on basis of the content of the report. And secondly, also because of time constraints, the members could not interrogate the report or the directorate because of the content of the report. Chairperson, as you correctly point out, the management of the directorate is here to answer any questions that the committee may raise on basis of the contents of the report. Mr. Morris, Ms. Pritima, Mr. Morris, Gideon Morris, as well as Ms. Pritima Osman, will lead the delegation in responding to whatever questions we which the committee may prove based on the contents of the report or on certain clarifications arising from the report itself. So what I'm saying is that, Chairperson, yes, you are correct. The approach ought to be for members of the committee to raise whatever questions they may have based on the contents of the report to the management of the directory. Chairperson, whilst I'm still on the floor, and I'm happy to learn that the chairperson has already been informed about my limited availability today. Chairperson has mentioned 12 o'clock, and in fact, I would wish to be a student earlier than that, and I think it would be proper if I would be a student at 11:30. This is because of family responsibilities and duties. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Judge. No, you are welcome. Even earlier than that, Judge, you are welcome to leave at any time, Judge. You are having a very capable team here who can handle it. You are welcome, Judge. Yes. Now, thank you very much for the clarification. Now, I am going to open the floor for questions to members of the committee so that any questions arising out of this report. Please, members, feel free, and then the members will. Mr. Self, I see your hands up. Yeah.
Thank you very much indeed, Chair, and may I congratulate you, Judicial Inspectors, on the annual report. I think it's a very, very valuable document. I think it contains a lot of very valuable information and suggestions. And I think its observations, you will agree, are the sort of observations that we as a committee have also seen in the site visits that we have done to many of the facilities. What I'd really like to do, I want to ask a general question and then a specific question. And the general question is that this report is full of recommendations to the Department of Correctional Services. For example, their recommendations around overcrowding, their recommendations about security classification, the recommendations about mentally ill inmates, and so on. I would like to know, in general, what has happened to these recommendations? How is the Judicial Inspectorate interfacing with the Department of Correctional Services regarding the recommendations that they make in their report, and what sort of response has been received from the Department of Correctional Services in regard to these, in some cases, very specific recommendations? Then can I just deal very specifically with the issue of mentally ill inmates on page 25 of the report. And it's certainly been my experience that what happens in many cases is that the Department of Health, and specifically the psychiatric hospitals, are full to overcrowding themselves. That in many cases, mentally ill people or the families of mentally ill people get court orders against the mentally ill people. They're then arrested as being either a danger to the family or a danger to themselves, and they land up then effectively in a waiting trial facility that are totally unproductive and unhelpful, and it seems to be a case of just shifting the blame. Now, I would suggest that this is an issue that we should sort of focus in on, because it is a very, very serious problem, and I think there are probably hundreds, if not thousands, of people who are in this position and where we don't seem to be making a great deal of progress. And I'd just like to comment to the Judicial Inspectorate on that. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much,
thank you, Chairperson. I think I also wanted to ask a question on the mental issues to Christmas, but I think it's covered by Mr. Self. I just want to know, according to the report, there is a decline in the number of ICDs between 2005, 2006, 2004, 2007, and what could be the reason. But also one is interested to know that what is the turnover of ICDs. And what are the challenges of appointment of IPs? And also the fact that we have the statistics of about the number of complaints that were received in 2005, 2006, but there isn't anything for 2006 and 2007. If the inspectorate can.
What are the reasons for increase in the number of unregistered? What recommendations do the AICP make in this and second question is that in the 57th the clinical system to you, what were this
thank you very much, Bishop Polo. Let me hand it over to the judge for them to respond, and then I'll take a question from.
Thank you,
Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. May I also, on behalf of the staff of the Judicial Inspectorate, express our sincere appreciation for this opportunity. It's every time, once or twice a year, that we get the opportunity to speak to the committee members. And we really see it, Mr. Chair and members, as an opportunity for us to drink from the fountain of knowledge that is available here. And we all hope that we will also demonstrate that we take what is said to us at heart. And I know this committee has spoken in the past that we focus too much on overcrowding, and we have done effort now, Mr. Chair, to spread the scope of the work that we cover. If I may deal with the question of the Honourable Mr. Chow, and then I'll ask Ms. Ottman to deal with the question of Ms. Chukunda, and Mr. Rana, if you can deal with the question of Bishop Chola. The question on the recommendations to DCS, sir, of course the report they have not seen before. They only see it once it's tabled. Detailed recommendations are given to them when we do inspections at the prison level. But I think also what we're saying in our report is, and we hope that by tabling the report in Parliament, that is the recommendations will actually be interpreted why there is only correctional services. We hope that the Portfolio Committee on Justice and Constitutional Affairs will take note of some of the recommendations we make. We hope that this committee would also use their influence, because the main theme of the report also is that the complexity of many of the problems that we see basically is wider than just the delegation or the authorities, the sphere of influence of the commissioner. Let's take, for instance, the problem with nurses. We know that the problem there is probably a lack of a market-related salary. So we hope that by tabling the report in Parliament, that the recommendations will be considered also by the Minister of Public Service and Administration and so on. But I must say the relationship with correctional services is generally well. Where we can and where they can implement, they do. It, of course, there's always exceptions. You get places where the IPDs are not as welcome as in other places. But the relationship is generally a good one. I don't know if I've addressed your question.
Just
to
add to that, I think what we were hoping by making the recommendations within the report was to be able to at some stage engage with DCS as well as other role players and stakeholders as well as this committee, to be able to see how the issues that we make those recommendations can be resolved or be addressed rather on a far more systemic sort of way rather than finding the initial slow solutions on a one-off basis. The issue of prison, as I said before, is a highly complex issue. And to have be able to address them properly is vital that we try and address them in a larger forum matter. And then we also wanted to, at some stage we thought about putting all the recommendations on one page and monitoring how these are being addressed over a quarterly basis. And we sort of would try that to see whether maybe we could do that at a later stage. But since the report is only now being tabled, I would suggest that the DCS and us and the other role players to sit together and actually see how these issues can be addressed on a bigger scale. Thank you.
I think the other point and the other question is, I think apart from the annual report, also our reports, our inspection reports that we generally submit to the minister and to the commissioner. I must say, up to now, we have not received any response from anyone that specifically around specific inspections. But I think the other question you asked around mentally ill patients, I think that's a very interesting question, and I think your point you make incredibly apt, because in Kimberley, let me give the practical example of Kimberley, and I think members visited Kimberley, the conditions next door, the mental hospital next door, are far worse than the prison. And the psychiatrist at the hospital next door asked me specifically, because I went to visit the hospital and looked at the conditions, whether he can't do his clinical work with the mental ill patients in prison. And I think that's where we need to, and we try to facilitate some kind of agreement between the two of them, and that people don't then need to stay in prison forever, that they can be dealt with clinically, and the treatment can be continued at that basis. So I think it's very, very interesting to look at center for center issues around mental health, but also then to look at the systemic, to look at some kind of agreement between the departments around mentally ill prisoners in prison. Thanks.
Last little word on the mentally ill persons who are in prison, often they are not criminals. And this is a prime example where the interaction of the different departments would definitely be needed. DCS is not schools to be able to deal with mentally ill persons who enter their prisons. And so this is definitely a place where the Department of Health and other departments will come in and speak about this issue. So we would urge that.
Ma'am, on the question of the decline in the number of IPVs, yes, you are correct. And unfortunately, the numbers have come down. And the reason for that is when Judge Erasmus took over, we restructured the organization. And basically what we, if I can make a comparison between the old structure and the new structure, is in the old structure we had ourselves organized according to functions that they performed. For instance, everybody that were involved in the appointment of IPVs came together and they were the IPV unit. And the same way we had an inspectorate unit, the same way we had a support service unit, and we had a legal service unit dealing with the complaints. But the research done by Professor Sarah Jadwa identified that one of the weaknesses in the inspectorate is that we were functioning in what they called silos, where there were not good cooperation between the various departments within the organization, and also the support given to the independent prison visitor at a prison level was not up to standard. And we then implemented a restructuring model, and the new organigram organizational structure is given on the last page of the annual report. But that system, ma'am, was then aimed at what we call viable business units, meaning that we wanted to create, or we want to create in every region, a visitors committee. And that visitors committee, staffed by an independent prison visitor, would then implement a system of oversight for the community by the community. But in this restructuring process, we have now gone as far as we've demarcated the areas. We have appointed full-time secretaries or visitors committee coordinators to all those people, and we have almost doubled our staff. But in the process now, the new people that will deal with appointing IPVs, they now need to again train, and they need to, so we've lost a bit of momentum. Our levels of vacancies, and we report that to the judge on a regular basis, and the judge is quite adamant on what we need to do, but our levels of vacancies went as far as only 40% of our posts were filled, but that is climbing up now. We stand at about now again almost 60%. So we'll be back to full speed by early next year, ma'am. But yes, I agree with you. That is a concern, and it's definitely one of the priorities we are addressing. On the question of the turnover, the turnover rate amongst IPVs is not that high. The IPVs normally, of course, they stay there for 3 years a term. Some of them would move on after the 3 years. Some of them will apply to become IPVs in other areas again. But the turnover rate is not that high. I think the problem is, of course, the rate at which they are being remunerated. Where they have not received any increase over the last 3 years. So that is a concern to us as well. And in terms of Section 93, Subsection 8, the remuneration of IPVs are determined by the Minister in consultation with the Minister of Finance. So we'll be in that process. And with the amendment bill, that process is also going to be adjusted.
I just want to add,
if
we regard our IPVs highly. They are our contact with the community and our contact with the prisoners as right at the toll face. And I was looking at why what happened with why the numbers had dropped. Some of the IPDs who had served for a while then became what we call visitors committee coordinators. So we lost a number of people, although they went into a higher structure, we lost a number of people there as well, and those are the positions that we now people to fill now there. But as Mr. Morris has just indicated, the process is it's also a process that we don't just appoint people. We go through a public nomination process, and then there are various processes to authenticate and see that these processes are done in such a way that there are no audit problems in regard to that. I wasn't clear about the challenges. Were you asking about what challenges they have or did they see, or just what was mentioned at the moment? Okay, thank you very much.
Let me add to what the challenge is. What is the relationship between the department and the IPV? I think that was a question I'm heading. You know, we know we are visiting prisons and we are interacting with the very same IPVs. And in your report, you are not talking about the challenges. What is the relationship? Are these people accepted by the department? Is there no stumbling block for them to do their work?
No, thank you, Professor. I think on the very issue, I just wanted to be sure of the IPD. I want to be sure as to whether we're talking about funded IPD posts, and therefore you will understand by the end of the financial year, or you're going to shift the funds to other programs. And that's what the teacher commented, because it is becoming a practice in most of the departments. And one would accept that it's not going to be part of your practice, just the infecting class. But also, I had the gentleman talking about the report which you combine after resisting presence and submit to the minister. And as a committee, we don't have those reports and would wish to help so that we are able to follow on your work and also conduct proper oversight function.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Mawaki,
it's part of the backlog of this question. Yeah, no, thanks. I just want to know about the mechanisms that are in place when recruiting the ITV. To make sure that they are the right person to people for the job. And also, there's a mention of a visitor committee. Can they elaborate on this visitor committee, because it is where some of the IPVs have gone to?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think let me address the question on the challenges and also an earlier question by Ms. Chikunda on the number of complaints that you don't see in the annual report this year. And the reason for that, ma'am, is that because of the fewer number of IPDs that we had during the year, the number of complaints will all indicate that it actually came down. But it didn't come down because of fewer complaints. It came down because of fewer IPVs being in the employ of the inspectorate. Let me use just one example, communication with families. In 2005, we recorded a total of 45,000 complaints from prisoners about communication with families. That last year, we only recorded 25,000. Now, we feel concerned if we put it in the annual report, it may be interpreted by somebody to say, oh, well, the numbers of complaints came down, but it's not. And that's why, because of we had so many vacancies, we decided this year not to have the number of complaints in the annual report. Of course, we have it available to the committee at any time. On the challenges, Mr. Chair, again, I think we identified a number of challenges ourselves, and a lot of it has to do with the logistical support that IPDs need at the prison level, and we're talking about the practicalities like access to a computer, access to a office space and so on, and that is why we have appointed the visitors committee coordinators to help them and to make sure that they are assisted and supported in their work. Again, there's some success stories of very successful IPDs working very well with the Department of Correctional Services, but unfortunately there are also cases, Mr. Chair, where they don't have a good relationship and they don't work well. But the approach that we have is that as soon as the IPD reports to us that they don't work well or that there's a lack of security, we'll send one of our compliance inspectors to address the situation, and in the extreme case, we'll withdraw the services of an IPD. And none of the prisons are, at this case, on that list of withdrawal of service. So, Mr. Chair, with all the problems, there is still good cooperation.
I want to apologize to the judge to drink out of this type of cup, Judge. I really want to apologize on behalf of this institution. It's not correct. I'm feeling very much ashamed that you must have waited in such a cup. I think that you are taking my place.
Chairperson, I would observe that we still part and parcel of the family of the third world. This is consistent with the third world standards.
Mr. Chair, if I can ask Mr. Michael Prusin to deal with the question of the mechanisms in place to ensure effective recruitment of IPD. Please, Mr. Prusin.
Good morning, all. I'm somehow involved with the appointment of the IPDs, hence I've been asked to have some comments on the matter. One of the objectives is to the IPD appointment is to try to involve committees in their own process, which basically involves that we have to have public meetings in the communities. That's also tabled and mentioned within the Contract Services Act that we need to be involved and publicly call for nominations. Now, our interpretation of that is that we need to have public meetings. Now, as a mechanism around that, then what we would then do is that we would then ask what has been earlier mentioned as this task committee coordinator. That's the person who is a member of that community to have that meeting for us. And then in that meeting, basically everything would be explained to whoever is interested about IPDs, what they do, and then what kind of a person we need to be appointed to an IPD. And whoever that is interested to become an IPD would then be given an application form, what we call a nomination form, that will be submitted to that person. Then we follow the normal HR processes where people will be given a closing date where they have to then submit their application forms. Once we come to the closing date of the application forms, we do have the office now in terms of the functional services section has been divided into two. We have the northern part, which is northern streams, we have the southern streams. The northern streams, their offices are in Centurion. There in that office, we have admin people who will be there responsible for capturing those nomination forms onto a computerized system. That system has been developed especially for IPDs, where once you capture the information that is in the nomination form, at the end of it automatically gives you a gross list in terms of a database of everybody who has applied as an IPD. But more so, in that system, it's so programmed that it gives a score to each and every one of the persons who has applied. It's programmed in terms of looking at at what kind of a person do we need as an IPV. So it's programmed to whatever information that the person is filling the application for. The system then gives or attach a weight to that information. Then it makes it much more easy for us then to do a shortlist. But also it makes it easy for us to avoid things of like Michael Prusent to appoint my cousin somewhere there and so forth, issues of nepotism and so forth. But the regional manager, for instance, the insurance and so forth, we can have an opportunity to go through the shortlist itself. Then thereafter, then we follow the process of having like interviews. We follow the process of like having other interviews and a recommendation that will then go to the judge, because the judge is responsible for the appointment of IPVs, whereas the regional manager will then recommend whoever should be appointed. But in the office itself, in terms of like, as the office is divided to like functional and corporate, on our side in the office, there is also an internal audit who then checks what the whole process that has been followed by the regional manager of Centurion or regional manager in the southern, which is Mr. Fritz in the southern screen. The internal audit function in our office will check whether all processes have been followed before it gets to the judge for the judge's signature. So it's in a separate internal audit that we do follow. I'm not sure like whether we were following, but now in terms of one of the challenges, previously it has been done from like for the office, someone from the office will go to the communities. But as Mr. Morris earlier on mentioned that because of the whole problem of restructuring, we have appointed people on contract basis of our office in the different management areas, what we call visitors committee coordinator. So that responsibility of doing the initial recruitment basically lies with them. And then like we started appointing them as from May this year. So they need a lot of support in terms of showing them how they should go about going around appointing IPVs. I hope that you can
follow up. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate this information and the library. But my follow-up question is about vetting. These people are going to work in prison. And there's a lot of millionaires in prison. Is there a mechanism of vetting them before they go into the prison and do their job? Because they are going to be mixed there with the prisoners that are very complicated.
Part of what we regard as the appointment of the IPV is a file that has information about the IPV. All the personal details of the IPV information was one of the things that comes from the appointment of the IPVs in terms of is there community support, is there an organization that nominates or supports you. So that information like would have nomination forms, personal details, etc. But one of the important things there is the fingerprints that we use, we call it SMP 92, that's a form where they have to take their fingerprints. We have that relationships that we have with the department here, at the Department of Labor upstairs. There is that unit that basically deals with all the fingerprint processing. So what we then do is that we send that through to them. That information now, like they are now very much quick. That information comes back to us within 3 days. Once we submit the fingerprint record to them, then the form, the record basically comes within 3 days. So we use that information that comes out of that in terms of to see whether the person wants to have criminal records and so on. Once we find out that, then we basically then also go back to see whether the person has declared whether he has had, because that's not necessarily mean if you had a conviction before, and you should really have to be out of the post. But then we look at situations of whether have you declared or not. If you have declared, we look at situations of the crime itself that you have committed. We look at if you are going to be appointed, in terms of making sure we're not placing you at the same center and so forth. But that's the what I can say from our side. I'm not sure what Tim can add.
This is a very important point that Mr. Mahote is asking, because we are tightening up. We are telling the Department of Correctional Services they must vet all the staff, all the staff, including service providers. Now, your staff
the issue that Mr. Mawande is very much important because there is direct contact with these people. And it's not only enough to say that Home Affairs is giving you, all of us know what is going on in Home Affairs. It's not a thing that we are not aware of. Everybody knows. Now, we must also screen these people thoroughly to go in there. We have said, you see, in Kalaka Busha, for instance, now, the question is, and Bishop Tolo raised this question there in Kalaka Busha, then service providers who is operating this electronics, the machines, open the gate and whatever, and then the department. Who is who? Who must be blamed in this? Now an IPV, the issue that Mr. Mawande is asking, the IPV, is he screened or not?
Mr. Chair, I think that we take absolutely what the committee is saying, and we need to look into that, into the deeper vetting of the IPVs. We'll find out a bit more about the services available, because I think it's a very valid point, and we take it. Actually, all that we do now is a screening for criminal records, and that's not enough. We'll look at it and we'll report back to the committee later on.
Of course, that Maras and 85 agents of an airport here come to and the idea of the for IPC, who work on the panel, who seen a letter and work on tour on diamonds in the work, who comprise the processor.
To be able to respond to that, maybe I must first start to explain in terms of how IPVs are supposed to go about doing what they're supposed to do in prison. as IPV speakers from the community, we hope that they will be able to come with an independent voice of what is happening inside the prison. Because they are not directly under our office. Like, we appoint them as independent contractors. Now, what we clearly do is that when we appoint them, we do give them a, what we call a minimum standard of service delivery. We stipulate that at least they are supposed to conduct a minimum of regular visits. Because, as Pratima earlier mentioned, that IPVs are supposed to be the eyes and ears of the judge. Because they are the people who are the nearest to the center. So we expect them that they have to be there on a regular basis, at least once a week. They have to go inside the prison. And then going and entering the prison premises, they have like, certain authority like access to documents, access to go to different sections of the prison itself. But what they are supposed to do when they go inside the prison, because we give them a broad task of like, you need to deal with the complaints of prisoners. And how you go about dealing with those complaints of prisoners, that's in consultation with the head of the correctional center. Meaning that you need to meet with the head of the center. If once you observe there's a complaint or a request, discuss with the head of center. We would call that interaction between the IPV and the inmate or prisoner as a form of an interview that happens between the interview during the regular visits. Now, during that interview, once they realize, let's say, the situation of Kimberly, let's say it comes to the IPV's attention that there is something about this person was supposed to be out on parole or the person was supposed to be released and so on. The IPV forces have like direct contact with the institutional committee that is there or the head of the unit or the head of the center. Now we take it that interaction, which is very much important coming from the IPV, needs that to happen, was towards trying to resolve and relieve some of the problems that exist inside the prison. Now, at the end of it, then the IPV, once it has done that, then attends, I think earlier on it was asked, what is this visitors committee? So the visitors committee, you would find that in, let's say, Portsmouth. Portsmouth are different centers in Portsmouth. Portsmouth forms a management area. Now, all the IPVs are appointed at Portsmouth and forms a committee that we call a visitors committee. Now, in that visitors committee, then the IPV would then report in terms of what's happening inside the prison. Now, the question then, which is very much relevant, is that how come if we follow all those processes, we don't pick it up? What we have then introduced in our office is that we need then, as like I mentioned, that we have visitors committee coordinators. Those are people like, who are under the office now on a contract basis. They have, amongst others, one of their responsibilities to conduct an audit. So in that audit, I'm having a copy of an audit which I can bring like that. Around. In that audit, the visitors committee coordinator ought them to go in firstly because there are two objectives of that audit. Firstly, because activities are being paid, we have to make sure that they earn the remuneration that they get, which means did they go to the prison? Because we are not there really to go and see and look at that. The issue of trust, but at the same time, we have the audit to go and go and check whether the person in the IPV did go there. That's for financial purposes. But in terms of looking at the IPV, in terms of the other objective of the audit, is to look at did the IPV really speak to the prisons inside there, which means what the coordinator would do is, firstly, he or she would meet with the IPV and say, give me your report. Then he will look at the report. And they say, okay, you are claiming that this is what you have done for the month of July. Let me go inside the center itself. The coordinator will go with the IV inside the center itself and go and look inside the center. Do you know this person? Has this person been coming around, has been claimed? One of the other sources that the visitor committee would use is like the G366. Look at whether the person was there. But most importantly, as IVs, when they work in the event when there is a complaint or a request, we do give IPVs indexes or records where they have to write down. In the record, for instance, it would mention the name of the prisoner, what is the nature of the complaint, the proposed solution, and the signature of the prisoner, and what steps did the IPV take in terms of resolving that. These are records that we keep, which then the coordinator, the coordinator, we then have to go and verify all those complaints we dealt with the IPV, whether they exist. Because putting away the issue of trust, somebody can just sit and write down, please, that's so and so and so on, and make things. So I'm trying to say that we do have an order responsibility placed upon the coordinator to go and check with the person of that. Now, for us, we have in many of our situations come upon situations where a prisoner will say that, no, I don't know this IPD, but I'm having this complaint about this IPD. A coordinator in his audit report would make a recommendation that I was there in this prison, I can testify that this inmate was there for this all of this year. There's no way, as part of the IPD's responsibility to a regular check, there's no way that they could have missed this prisoner. So I am recommending suspension of this IPD, I'm recommending termination of this IPD. So once the situations that are crossed like that, we immediately move with the issue of like terminating the service of the IPD, because why didn't the IPD deal with the complaint? Thanks.
Je vais te voir immense dans ce pays qui est là, c'est un problème. Then I did it, maybe I come home from there. Maintenant, il y a pas de problème. Je vais te prendre ce partenaire, meilleur par contre pour se dire Khalier. Dans les troncs, ça est quand tu vas être dans les garçons. Et ils ont juste là, c'est sous l'info. Quand les gens vont se créer des tâches, c'est juste. Et on l'a dit, yes, iemand wat so die proces dat het om die vroeg gevat te kie. Nou, ander woorde, wat ek wil hier, sêker ander mense, jylle die sêker ander mense dronk, die het mense al kan nie gees nie, hy het net uit die kartie kie. Nou, dit wat ek sê, wat is die werk, as die wacht iemand om laat die kom klaar, dit sê, hy vat die klaar. Nou, ek kan nie lees nie, ek kan nie skryf. Hoe kan ik dit nog niet zeggen voor mij eigenlijk? Dank u voor dat.
I think, Cindy, you'll come here. But I think, Mr. Morris, you must clarify the issue of what is the role of the IPC so that all of us must understand. According to me and according to the Act, is that an IPC having an office there, when an inmate is having a complaint, then the inmate will come and report because it's very much important that we understand as the portfolio committee here that what is the responsibility of the IPD. You see what Bishop Tolo is saying. Are you going around in the cells and asking for complaints? Can you clarify? That is what you are saying. Yes, Cindy?
No, thank you, Chairperson. I was getting a little bit worried. Because if the office, they would say the ICDs are supposed to, they ought to, that worries me quite a bit. Because at this stage, at least, I'm expecting the office to be able to say on 99% cases, we are sure they are correct. But if this ought to, supposed to, it would seem like all of us are not sure as to whether we can rely on any information. I'm really worried about this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought Mr. Morris has answered my question, but the gentleman there has to say. He mentioned the issue of termination and suspension. If there's a problem with the ITV, but in the report there is no mention thereof, can they, maybe they won't have it difficult now. In this financial year, are there IPVs their services have been terminated? Or are there IPVs
the
that have been...
Action, whatever.
Yeah.
Thank you. Over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I may just take a few minutes then on explaining the role of an IPV. What we do, Ventura, is when we appoint an IPV, we sit down with them and we negotiate with them certain what we call minimum standards of service delivery. Now, it's a big word to basically say, how often will you visit the prison? And we come to an agreement that you'll visit the prison at least 2 times a week, as an example. Then we allocate hours specifically just for that task. We say 7 hours for 2 visits. Then we negotiate with them how many prisoners they must interview. Our minimum standard is that they must interview at least 25% of the prison population on per month. Now, you know also that prisoners come and go all the time, but then basically, once we have sat down with them and we negotiated minimum standards of service delivery, we then sign a contract with them. And they are not employees that will earn a salary. They must invoice us for the work that they did. So they must, that lady at Kimberley, we can go back to her record, and every month she must send to us an invoice for the work that she did. And she must tell us, when did you visit the prison? From what time did you come in and what time did you leave? And we only pay them for that because they are independent contractors. They don't get a salary. They need to bill us for the work that they do. They invoice us and we only pay them for that work that they did. Now, it comes back to the question, Mr. Chair, must they walk around the prison? Yes. One of their minimum standards of service delivery is what we call a full site visit. They must do at least 2 full site visits a month, and that means they must go and look at all the parts of the prison. In the storeroom, is there nobody locked up somewhere in the storeroom? They must go through all the cells, and during that site visit, on average, they interview 250 prisoners, which we calculate as a 5-minute interview, and we give them a certain amount of hours and money for that. And then, of course, the longer interview where you sit down, once the prisoner indicates that they have a complaint, the first thing that they must do is they must make sure that the prisoner is, as is described in the law, given the opportunity to record their complaint in the G365 Departmental Correctional Services Complaints Register. Because once it's in that register, it's also part of the formal audits done by the Auditor General and the Departmental Inspectors in seeing whether that complaint is resolved. So the first step that the IPV will do is they will do a full site visit, they will interview prisoners, they may even speak about Bafana's charge on the 2010. The idea is to speak to prisoners to hear what their complaints are. And if the prisoner has a complaint, they will write it in the 365 register. They will record it in the index of interview, as Mr. Prusen said, and they will then submit that report to us at the end of the month, because that is also a good indicator for us, the number and nature of complaints that they receive. And each and every invoice of an IPV is checked and signed by the visitor's coordinator before we pay them. And how they check them, for instance, the time that they spend in the prison, all of the members of visited prison, when you go in there, is that register that you must sign, that 366 visitor register. Now, the IPVs must also sign that register. Every time that they go, they must sign that register. And we go and we check that register with the invoice that they submitted to us. If they said they received a complaint, again, we take the departmental official records, the 365 register, and we again check that it's there. So on that question, on the termination and the suspension disciplinary steps, Mr. Chair, the IPVs are not employees, so there's no disciplinary code in place for them, but they are service providers. If we are unhappy with their service, we follow the rules of fair justice, we give them the opportunity, the normal process, but they are then dismissed by the judge or by the delegated person that would decide on that. I don't know, Mike, if you've got specifics, but I would maybe, and please, if the group will differ from me, I would say that last year, sir, a total of 12 IPVs whose services were, is it even, I'm looking at both streams, probably about 12 IPVs throughout the country that their services were terminated mainly because of a lack of performance. Not dishonesty, it's the fact that they initially they like this job. It's nice, it's interesting to go and visit a prison. But you know, to sit with prisoners for 70 hours a month and listen to their complaints, it can become a very, very tiresome job. And you see that people lose interest. And that's the concern that we have, and that's why we appoint new IPDs all the time. Because it's a very difficult job. Some people have the spirit to do it, but many people, after 3 years, they say, no, thanks, I've had enough of this work. I don't know,
I think a very important point is the decentralization. So what we have found is exactly the kind of concerns that's raised here. That you're in Cape Town and you want to monitor the work of people in these outlying areas. And that's the reason why we appointed these coordinators in the management areas. So we are now keeping the coordinators accountable for the work performance of IPD. That's the one point. The second point is, previously we appointed IPDs on a yearly basis. I think this committee raised concerns about why are people only appointed for 1 year. Our finding is that people get institutionalized. They become so used to the system that they almost, you don't know whether what's the difference between them and the water. And I think that was the rationale behind keeping short-term and then reappoint people but in other prisons in those kinds of facilities. And I think perhaps we need to just look at that kind of system again. But I think an important point that members are raising is the issue of the caliber of persons who are appointed. And I can tell you, I'm the manager for the reserving team. I sit on the interviews, and I promise you, we do a thorough, even at interview level, of absolute assessment. And you may survive and score very high, and at the end, we ask you one question where you bring out very, very kind of shaky issues, and we will put that to the judge and finally make sure take the recommendation to appoint or not to appoint. But I think the process that Mr. Mawosi is talking about is quite a thorough one from the receiving of the nomination form right through deciding who gets sorted electronically to the point of the interviews and then the final kind of decision by the judge. Thank you.
The other thing that all of us have failed to mention is that the ICD, before they become appointed, go through a period of training. They get thorough training in what the work is that they're meant to perform. And after the training, they write an exam. In the exam, if they are tested in regards to what their ability is to interact, what the mandate is of the judicial inspector, do they understand what the constitutional imperatives are, and all of that. So there are those kinds of processes also in place. Because we would not put somebody in the prison who didn't have that kind of sense behind them.
The reason why the members are asking and harping on this issue of the ICT is because, you see, for the financial year, you have spent 6.4 million rand on their pay. And it's the duty of these members to know if these people are doing their work or not. Because we are also visiting, we are visiting prisons and we interact with them. Some of them, it's a fact. Some of them don't even know about some of the problems that we are picking up there. Because we are also interacting with them in meetings, and they will hear this issue for the first time in the meeting. That's why the members are asking on this. Let me take another round. But we are moving away from this one of the ICD now. If we have told it now, that's why I said, that's why you are. We must please do follow up work on this.
Yes, Lord Christopher, thank you. My question is on death in prison. That we regard death in prison seriously as a committee. Whether it is natural or unnatural, we, according to the report, it's recorded that there is a decline in the number of natural deaths. I'm interested to know as to what do you think are the reasons for the decline. Is it coincidental or because of some actions that are taken? But also, there is an increase in the number of unnatural deaths, which is a bit worrying. Can the office of the inspecting judge give us reasons for the increase so that we probably know? And if there has been any recommendations for what was chosen to subject by the office, can we be informed about it?
Thank you, Mr.
Chair. Yes, thank you, Chair. Most government departments and constitutional entities, when they report to Parliament, set themselves performance indicators in those reports. I was just wondering whether the inspectorate could comment on, do they think that this is an appropriate way for them to report? And if so, what are the sort of indicators that they would have in mind for allowing us and them to see whether they're actually achieving the goals that they set out to achieve? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Chairperson, I hope that what I'm going to ask now is what the inspector can answer me on. Knowing that the death penalty has been abolished in South Africa, I recall that a few years ago I listened to a program on television that there were still prisons of people on death row, and their cases had to be reviewed or they had to be retrialed in order for them to receive a life sentence or whatever. I just want to know, are there still people on death row? What is the situation with those people, and how many still need to be retrialed if they can answer that? Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you, Chairperson, my question is that has this recommendation been presented to the minister, and what has the response to this recommendation been? And another question, Chairperson, is that why was the decrease in expenditure on salary for 2006 and 2007? And in compliance to the previous year, 2005 and 2006.
Yeah, let me follow and or add to what Bishop Dollar has asked. Let us rephrase this question. The Department of Correctional Services, did you inform them about all these things that is happening that you found? And what? Because according to your document, we don't see recommendations. And if there's any recommendation, did the department follow it up or not? That is the bishop. That is here.
Over to you.
Mr.
Rauner,
can I ask you to deal with the
day? Good morning, Chairperson and members of the committee. Ms. Chikunga has asked, and Bishop Cholo earlier had asked about the question of unnatural death. First thing, if I can just address Bishop Cholo's question before I get to Ms. Chikunga's question. The reasons for unnatural death. As the report indicates, the department has indicated that there were 66 unnatural deaths during the year of 2006. That figure is broken down, and I intended to answer the question the previous time of the year with regard to the causes of those deaths. I can give you those figures. Unnatural deaths, the majority of them are caused by suicide, by hanging. 21 of them, and what I'm reading from is part of the audit process that Judge Rutland has asked us to do. We've taken each and every case and analyzed them. 21 is the number for inmates hanging themselves, majority of them. Assault, offender on offender, there were two for that period. There was one drowning, there was one shooting, as reported. Of course, the corroboration, whether it was actually a drowning or shooting, that detail we can give you as well. So to answer that question, majority of them, Bishop Tolo, suicide by hanging. What we expected to do, or what Judge Erasmus has indicated in the report that he wanted a full audit conducted on each unnatural death. The submission of the investigation report from the department in respect of that, for us to look at it and then express an opinion as to whether there was criminal liability or civil liability or not. Now, what we do is that in the event that we feel that from the departmental investigation report, the department investigates all this, natural or unnatural, we get the investigation report, we will look at it. In other words, they represent to us their investigation. If we feel that further investigation needs to take place, we would ask the department to do that. If we feel that a member should be criminally prosecuted, we would then refer that kind of matter to the Director of Public Prosecution. If I can just cite one example, one or two examples in the Western Cape. There was a young female offender who passed away last year sometime, if I remember, who was shackled, and she committed suicide by burning herself. In that particular matter, for example, we recommended to the department, the Director of Public Prosecution, that that person be charged for culpable homicide. Of course, our investigative capacity, etc., is limited. We rely largely on the department representation to us. And if we can pick up discrepancies and so on, we do that. So that's what happens to unnatural deaths. You know, all deaths are reported by the Department of Correction Services. They represent to us the nature and the cause of the chronically initiated. We then request the investigation report, which we analyze and then follow the process which I alluded to earlier. I think that answers your question. The one problem that we do find, and maybe before I do that, the department, in terms of their own policy and an agreement with our office, reports this, as I said, via our webpage. Now, if anybody went to our webpage, I'm sure many people have gone to it. It looks like that. There's a little icon which I think is called HOP Report. And when they open that, they then follow, I think, what they call a wizard program, a step-by-step answer, a question-answer kind of thing. Inter alia, some of the questions we ask them are those statutory minimum in the Act, besides the date of death, the inmate's relatives informed, did he or she suffer from a pre-existing condition, all little indicators with regard to whether the department had done what they ought to have done by giving them inside custody. One of the problems, and we continuously try and rectify it on an individual basis with reporters at each management area, is that they report death as unnatural other. There may be many reasons for it. They must, in terms of the Act, report forthwith, immediately. Often they're not sure because the medical practitioner, pathologist, whoever, has not confirmed the medical cause of death. It's a high figure. I think that figure is about 27, if I'm not mistaken, or 27. Unnatural other. But then we encourage them to take a day or two longer and report to us more accurately, because it kind of skews the statistics that we produce. And of course we follow it up. The next question is, what does other mean? And it's something that we do on an individual basis. Collectively, I think we would perhaps, and the recommendation that we lay with the Department of Correctional Services, to re-engage their staff at the bottom, that their own policies are followed. They have a policy. Often individuals on the ground sit behind the computer and they make mistakes, etc. It takes a lot of time to corroborate those kind of things. But unnatural deaths, as I said, department indicates 66 were unnatural. Majority of them were suicide by hanging. From my records now, no violence by members on inmates last year, as reported. Of course, these things can change once we get the reports and we analyze them. I hope I answered the question with regard to unnatural deaths of Bishop Tolo and Chikunga. The reason for... If there's any more specific information on particular deaths, I know Mr. South, in fact, there was a particular one which he was raised, I think I might have picked up publicly. Yes, Callahan, if I'm not mistaken. I don't have that information offhand, but we are aware of that particular one. And if more information is needed on what our findings were, etc., what are the recommendations, we are happy to share it.
Can I just, just because I think I'd be keen to know whether or not the inspector does follow up on these things. The allegation in that particular case was that the person had been transferred to a provincial hospital, whereas the mischief had been done when the person was incarcerated. So it didn't become an unnatural death in prison. It became an unnatural death in the hospital. And I just wondered whether that is also covered by the scope of the investigation.
I can't answer that at this stage, but I'm happy to follow it up with the Chief and the Commission. But I'm aware of that particular matter.
And let us get the response.
I'm going to also answer the question of the death row statistical. Just before that, the decline in natural deaths, Mr. Chikunga had asked. Our annual report, one, we don't have medical expertise, so I'm not even going to be able to attempt to answer that part without running away from it. The decline in unnatural deaths, our annual report at page 43. Indicates in paragraph 2 of page 43 that one of the reasons is that there was a reduction in the amount of prisoners in prison, in the amount of, if I can read it, the overall number of deaths in prison decreased from 1,554 in 2005 due mainly to the reduction in prison numbers. However, the reduction in prison numbers for 2006 amounted to 6%, whereas the number of deaths declined by a nominal rate of 14.4%. The real reduction in deaths, 6%. It could be attributed to a variety of reasons. One of them may be the reduction of prison numbers. I wouldn't be able to answer that in any better way. It may be interventions by the Department of Correctional Services. Perhaps maybe Morris could answer that if necessary. If I could just go on and finish my part of it. What Mr. Kipido was asking was something which our office, during Judge Fagan's time, in fact, we become involved in, just to jolt everyone's memory. At the time, the Human Rights Commission was charged with overseeing, fast-tracking these death penalty substitutions. It's in the same act, if I'm not mistaken, as the minimum sentencing, 1997 Act, where the Legal Aid Board and the Ministry of Justice from the court sort of produced a decision. Statistics with regard to how many people had been sentenced to death and how many were supposed to go through the process. And the Legal Aid Board had directed resources from the session to act on behalf of the affected inmates. There were one or two court cases. I remember Matthew CB, etc. Where the Department of Justice, we really played a addressing role to all strictly within our mandate, but we lie between the Department of Justice, Legal Aid Board, etc. Second matter also is the Constitutional Court of Appeal. As far as I know, that in terms of that judgment, I think the court has granted what they call a structural injury to citizens. Department of Justice come and report to us. I think at this stage, I don't have any knowledge, or officers have knowledge, of any prisoner whose sentence is still not being substituted. It's something that we could do as part of the survey again to confirm that is true.
That's the problem with an advocate, a lawyer. Very long time to answer no or yes. Being constitutional, according to him and constitution, the issue is very simple. Yeah, that you are not aware of any person on that road. But I know that you want to convince the court that your client is right. But granted, yeah, that's the issue. There's other questions. I just want them to finish the questions and then we'll take follow-up later. Yes, Mr. Morris?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe I can also just add to the one on the death row. What we found also is that often the court has made a decision, but the prisoner was never informed. So they would have that uncertainty. And that is where our prison visitors, specifically Ms. Motsimane at UCOP Maximum, played a very important role of following up and giving the prisoners feedback. Because when the court is done, they're done.
Yeah.
This is getting the feedback back to the prisoner, which is quite a difficult one. So, but on a bit of perspective. The one on the deduction in the natural death, ma'am, as we also said, we've seen what we call a nominal rate of reduction of 15% due to the reduction of a number of prisoners in custody, but we also saw a real reduction of about 9.4%. Now, again, we don't have the real the reason for why there's a decline in the number of natural deaths in prison. And the best indicator there is to take it per thousand. How many prisoners are dying per thousand? Now, you remember our previous reports, we said for the period 1995-96, when the information became available, until 2003, we saw the increase, or that level increase, from 1.6 deaths per thousand up to almost, it was 9.8. But we've seen it now drop again to 8.3. Now, the reason for that is probably the remission given to short-term prisoners last year. A lot of people been fast-tracked through the system. And then also we know that at the private prisons, they are giving now the ARV medication. But we haven't done a statistical analysis on it yet to present it to the committee. This is the cause. All that we're doing is we're giving it to you as an indicator. There's a decline in the actual number of unnatural deaths recorded in our prison. Mr. South spoke about the performance indicator, sir. Again, we would gladly accept any recommendation or gladly consider any recommendation from this committee as what you would like to see in the report as well. We have considered other reports as well, and we regard this as a report from the judge to president about the treatment of prisoners and the conditions, not as much as what we do and how we perform, but we would gladly sit down with the committee if there are specific indicators, as Ms. Chikunda maybe mentioned, the number of IPDs. That should maybe be a standing item in our annual report, and we will really appreciate any inputs from your side as to what performance indicators you will use to measure our success. Because what we're also trying to do with this report is we're trying to develop performance indicators that would help you to consider the success of correctional services. But thank you, sir.
I probably it's not a question, but it's a comment. Because as the question that's being answered, that many people who die unnaturally. 21 of them commit suicide. And what came into my mind was whether there is a relationship between the crime committed and the suicide. I had that in my mind to say probably if I was learned, I would probably conduct a research study on that one. I'm not. But then the question that then came into my mind was whether the office has relationship with other stakeholders, such as the ones that are responsible for researching such things in prison, that probably they can recommend to them. Can you check on this one?
Yes, like a follow-up, and then I'll take another round of questions.
Can I attempt to just try and answer that, please, Mr. Chair? The question that you've asked obviously falls outside of our expertise to answer off the bat in that way. However, we have built a relationship with Harvard Law University, and they often send us interns out to try and do some of this kind of research. We don't have a relationship here, unfortunately, with any university that does this kind of research. But it's a vital field where we start taking what the crime means to people and how they would deal with it in prison. And so we're looking at all these kinds of issues. In fact, as you mentioned this, we will actually ask one of the law students to actually undertake this research and see whether they can come back to the committee with some sort of findings around them.
Let me ask you a question that you were coming.
You are saying in your report that one of the things that you are trying to do is to make communities aware of the activities of the existence of this office. Can you give us some examples? You know, Mr. Mahote is always with the parole board asking this question. What are you doing? How many meetings did you have in society? Say in Mpumalanga, the IPP is there. Because you see why I'm asking this question? It's because these people must also play a role in when this person is coming out of prison, to prepare society. Now, can you give us examples of your activities in society out there, in the community?
Thank you. Can you comment? There is a report in page 19 on addition. It's a paragraph that by saying the Act set out clear obligations of the state towards a prisoner upon admission. And then the second paragraph, it says, sadly, if very few prisons comply with this provision. Now, my question is, why is that? Why are they not doing what the Act says they are supposed to be doing? Because they are depriving the prisoners their right to undergo a health status examination on admission. Or what does the Office of the Inspecting Judge do about that?
Mr. Mawade, Bishop Dolo. Thank you, Mr. Sorry.
My question is what role was played by the Inspecting Judge in strengthening the level of integration and cooperation between the role player?
Very good question. It's the same that I have asked now. It's a very, very, very good question. Can you respond and then we'll take another one?
Let me on the community, what we specifically do, I'll ask Ms. Lizelle Albert, also our assistant regional manager, to give you some information on what we do
to strengthen our role in the community, but I think also fair to at the outset say we're not doing enough. I think that's also, Mr. Chair, that there's always, it's a, one of those areas that we need to do more. And maybe this committee would mandate us to take this presentation that we did to the committee last week, take that down to the community, discuss with them also the detail of the report of the inspecting judge. But I think, Lizelle, can you just elaborate, please?
Sure, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, as some of the members of staff indicated before, the ITVs, when we appoint the ITVs, we make sure that they play a certain role in the community. They, some of them are part of community organizations, and they do have a relationship with the community. Recently visited the community or the IPV and the DCCOs in the Oswin region, where the IPV is busy with a community project. He went out to the community and he had meetings with stakeholders, with community organizations, with certain department officials. And they are starting a project there where they can offer employment to offenders, released offenders. There's a couple of projects that they getting involved with at the moment. Is the Working for Water project. It's the vegetation, alien vegetation that they're trying to get rid of. There would be projects such as welding projects and they make furniture. That is all, you know, part of the community involvement. They also think, we also have some of the ITVs who go out to the schools, and they sort of speak to the schools, the children at school, you know, what about the conditions and treatment in the prison. There's also some of them who go to the churches and speak to the people. You know, just about informing what's going on in the prisons and what our role, the role
of... Can you give us examples of places where these people are doing this?
In the ITV, the VTCO and the ITV in Craddock, they normally go to the schools and they speak to the schools. There's also the VTCO and ITV in the Kimberley area. They go to the smaller areas around Kimberley, like Boshoff and places like that, and they also go to the schools there and they speak to the children there.
I just want to add, Mr.
On that issue.
Chair,
can I ask I don't. I'm not quite sure about the answer there. Because there's a difference here. Example, just food. Unemployed in art loan up to delivery and crossroads. I attend meetings there. By organizational meetings, civic organizational meetings. For the past 3 years, I've never seen one meeting addressing such issues in this community. And people that are filling up these prisons that I'm talking about come from this community that I've just mentioned. Can they spread their wings and make sure that in this community such initiatives are taking place? Because at one stage I had to invite officials from Baltimore to go and address community meetings in Kairi. Can they go to these areas, in fact, to the township where the majority of inmates come from, and do this initiative? Because in this area that I've just mentioned, nothing is happening.
Mr. Chair, may I respond by the Correctional Services Amendment Act, Section 90, will from now on also oblige this organization to submit its reports to the portfolio committee on any inspections and say and they, what they do. And may I then ask that, Mr. Chair, that we take this as a key performance indicator of the organization, and that we go out and we push this, we've heard the motivation from the committee, and we can, Mr. Mahotsi, report back to this committee on a quarterly basis as to what community projects we are running, what community meetings we had, because I fully agree with you, that's one area that we need to be doing more. So if that's in order, Mr. Chair, we will submit a report and we'll come back, let's say, in a quarter's time, and we'll come and give feedback on those meetings. And in the meantime, may we also request, Mr. Chair, that if there are specific organizations or bodies that the members of this committee know about and they would like to invite us to come and speak at these meetings, that they also take the initiative to inform us, and we'll either get the judge there or one of the second prize winners to come and speak with the Lordy, but it's an open invitation, sir.
I think I need to also just mention, and I don't know, and I think what Mr. Morris is saying, I think it's a good point to vote on, but we normally use the calling for nominations meetings, and there was one in Anoudishok. Now, recently, when we called for nominations, which was attended by the community of Anoudishok in Portable. In fact, the ANC invited us to come and address the Portable constituency. So I'm saying these meetings are happening when we do calling for nominations, and there we address the mandate of the office. We address the issues that we are doing. But there's the problems. People are saying prisons are ourselves. We address the issues there. So I'm saying, in a way, that we can do much more. But I'm saying that's a very good start, in my opinion, to address and to go out and to say to people, this is what's happening in prisons. It's a myth that children are learning that it's good to be a 28. It's a myth. And we address those myths in those meetings. So I think we're doing quite, and I think we can build on that. I think our IPVs that we recruit from those non-public non must get out into the community and do more. And I think that's the point I think that
we're taking. Thank you very much. Yeah. Can I just add, and I think it's very important that we understand that we see these meetings with outsiders on two levels. One is with what we call stakeholders. Now, those are often the people whom we see as role players within the prison or within inmates, such as people from justice and people from provincial departments, more especially with magistrates, for instance, who have contact directly in court. And I want to mention this example because the meetings actually happened today in the Limpopo area, where they are having a meeting in order to discuss exactly this issue. There are farmers there who are willing to take ex-prisoners in to teach them farming skills, and it hasn't managed to get any further. So our VCCO there coordinate this meeting, and they're going to be discussing this kind of initiative there. And I take it fully that we haven't done enough in this regard. We need to do more. So please, we can ask you to inform us of organizations that want us to come and talk with them. We'd be very grateful to get that kind of information and request.
Well, the issue that Mr. Mawate is, I attended, and I think Judge Fagan was still there, but I mentioned it to Mr. Morris as well. At the compliment. You know, I attended a meeting organized by your manager in the province there, since it was under what? Yes, it was in the prison, organized, and I can tell you all the stakeholders were in one room. That is the type of thing that Mr. Mahote is talking about. Go out to the community. You know, churches were there. Local government, councillors were there. And, you know, when we are saying reach out to the community, this councillor must be part and parcel of this because they are doing their work on the ground. Bishop Dolo is always, the other time when we were in one of these, he was asking, where is the councillor of the area here in this meeting? Because they can also assist in helping us, because this thing is a very big thing. We will never address it alone. Yeah.
Any other thing that was not addressed, and then we will take the last round of questions, and then we will summarize.
Question from Mr. Mahote on why are the rules not followed at admission. And this morning we're looking at specifically three rules. The first one is the rule of information. You newly admitted prisoners should by law be informed by the correctional officials about what rules exist in this prison, how they can go about lodging a complaint, who's the head of the prison. They should be given information to address some of the uncertainty that exists when they are admitted at the prison. The other rule is the one of medical screening. And the third one is that then the manner in which people are searched and which they are then taken, their private clothes are taken away and they're given prison clothes. And those are the three rules that we are specifically worried about. They are not being met. Now, the reason for that, we did a few simple calculations, but I can just mention. For instance, at Paulsmoor, every day they admit 740-odd people in the afternoon coming back from the court, and they send, it's about 300 people that they send in the morning, 460 people coming in the afternoon. Now, they've got only 5 people working in the records office. Now, if you take a search that will take you about 3 minutes to search a person, it means that those 5 people will be busy for 4 hours just searching. And it's again a question of there's not enough staff to admit the prisoners. There's not enough focus on the importance of the staff. And that is what I think that's the only, and although we're not here to find excuses for the department, the reality is that they don't have enough. They should probably reassign more people to do this important function. If we've addressed your question.
Any other questions?
No, thank you, Chairperson. I just want to say something about the spreading pattern for the office. Chairperson, the report is rather too guilty on that one. You just can't make any conclusions. You cannot trace their spending pattern. But also the fact that maybe even when you go to the EMP, the office does not feature in those. So we would really wish to get a more detailed report on their spending pattern that indicated that they reduced the number of IPVs because of whatever reason. We don't know, like I said, as whether they are understanding now. Indeed, the department regards that as saving, but we think some of us that understanding is well. So we can't speak to this expenditure because it's just rather too brief and too quiet. Thank you.
I want to end before we close. So
this is not enough. We want to know what your budget was 20 million rand. Can you give us a breakdown? This is not enough. You say it's only 3. Salaries, it's goods and service, salary, payment of IPD. Give us a breakdown what you have done with this money. Very important to us. We want to know that. The issue of underspending is very serious to us in Parliament. If you are saying you are going to need 20 million rand for the year, we are expecting from you to use the 20 million rand, not to use 13 million and come back. Because the next financial year, we will give you 12 million because you are saying that you don't need 20 million. It's very, very serious. I want you to take that into consideration. But I want to add what Ms. Chukunga is saying. This is not enough. We need details of the spending pattern. Bishop?
Thanks so much, Chairperson. It's a one question, Chairperson. In 2005-2006, IPD received 429,700 complaints. What was the total for 2006-2007?
Thank you very much. Over to you.
Mr. Chair, yes, we'll include more detail on the spending in the next annual report. If that's the need of the committee, we'll also forward, ma'am. Of course, we have very detailed information. We can forward that to the committee by this afternoon or tomorrow on Monday morning, Mr. Chair. And maybe also the committee should, and I say this at the risk of getting a hiding from my judge, but maybe the committee should also consider asking the Auditor General to come and have a look at our spending patterns and the way that we do the because it would be important feedback from us.
So are you saying that the Auditor General is not checking your spending?
They check it as part of the budget on correctional services. But they haven't done.
They are going to address that one.
And I think we would also appreciate any audit like that, because it would also help us to identify weaknesses and where we need to do. But on that basis, on the one of the number of complaints, maybe Bishop, I can visit just a list. But as I mentioned earlier, we didn't put it in the annual report because we are concerned that because of fewer IPVs, there are fewer complaints, but here is a list of all the complaints that we've received for last year, and I can send it around to the chair. I haven't calculated all of them.
Yeah.
Okay.
It is not your copy. You can send it with a pen.
Thank you.
Member, please, there's no other question.
Then let me
say this. I want to repeat what I have said a week ago, that there is a very, very visible improvement in this operation. The type of a report that we are having here, that is being submitted, is the type of report and result that we, the Parliament, are looking forward to. In saying that 20 million rand, I'm saying 20 million rand of taxpayers' money have been given to an entity. We are expecting from this entity to do exactly what the taxpayers want from the government. We are the watchmen. We are here to come and ask them what has happened to the entity. I am saying on behalf of this committee, we are very much impressed with the type of some issues that need to be addressed. As time goes on, we will address those types of things. One thing that I must say is that we have now changed the act. Will ask, we are going to look forward to each and every report that you people are investigating or whatever. You see, the two issues that I know that there was investigation, and I'm looking forward to have this report in front of you. There was an incident of other vandalism where an inmate was beaten to death, and nobody knows about that thing. I know about it. And this thing of the investigation of the Cougars of killing, your office has done an investigation, and we are looking forward to have that in front of us. I only want to wish you well in the work that you are doing. You see, you are in an independent, I want you to stress. You are an independent office of the inspecting judge, and we are expecting from you to come up with independent reports to this country. Not influenced by anybody. Not only not even us, but the truth. Because that is what we are expecting. That's why we are approving a budget of 20 million rand. And if you say we need 25 million rand, we will say no. Now, with this word, thank you very much for the work that you are doing. But it is a message also to the ICB and the entire staff. We really appreciate what you did for us. Thank you very much. And the meeting is at the end. Members, can you please say 2 minutes? 2 minutes. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Yeah, can you leave that to the other report? Very good job. Very good. I will always say that. I will always say yes, that is only I don't want to only that I want to that's what I'm saying, just 2 minutes. That's an outstanding visit of quality. And I think that it's only proper for us to do this before we on Friday. So I'm having a proposal next week, Tuesday, after this meeting. This meeting is only the agenda, is the adoption of this report. So after this meeting, then we are not even going to ask. But please, it's not for public. Even the department must not know. That's why I'm saying it's for us. Don't organize anything, transport and everything. I will ask members here, even to help us with transport, if it is possible. I'm saying if it is possible. We don't want to organize transport, otherwise the department will know that we are doing to check the things that it was identified. We are not going to have a prison system. It's the area that we have identified from our water community and so that we go there and show the people. If things are right, then we get right. That is the announcement that I said that immediately after our meeting. I'm saying this meeting won't take long. That's why I asked you to bring the document in here. This is a new thing that we are going to do from now. We are not going to put documentation in the decision rules of the meeting. So that I must also be sure Bishop Solo is having the document in. We are going to hand over the document in the meeting so that nobody will have an excuse in saying that we have not received the document. The document was not placed in the decision. You are having the document now, from now until Tuesday. Tuesday, in the meeting, we are deliberating on the document because we have time to read the document. That is the issue that I said. Bishop,
yeah, very different. I was always visiting the airport for a while, and maybe that's
That's why I say it's very much possible.
No, Bishop, let me correct you. This is in the vocation.
Oh, okay.
This is in the vocation that we have seen. Ourself, Mr. Mawate and Cindy have done. We are following up so that we can choose this sector because it's very important. People out there are saying that we said that in 90 days this thing will be. We must keep our credibility as a community.
That you have then said that my friend asked
for my guide. Yeah. It's only two cards. That is, mine is available, you will have to buy in my card. Myself and yours. So it's not necessary. You are having two cards. It is your car, and Mr. Self will go with his car as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'll let him with you.
Yeah, you will go with your car. Yeah. That's fine. I mean, mine will take five, yours will take five, and Mr. Self and Mr. Kitilo will go, so follow, and go with me or whatever. You understand what I'm saying? We are having enough time. I don't want to inform or to hire any transport. That is the reason why I said let us do our own. It's an unannounced visit. If it is an unannounced visit, then we can ask him to organize transport because Parliament must pay. But this will be a secret visit for us. Yes. That's right. Yes. Remember, all of you are having that report in your office. Please go to your report in your offices. Is the report, Bishop, of the organization? And they adopted that report in our office. This is the report of the prison visit of the complaint of the officer. The three members of the committee were Mr. Mamote, and James. Please go to, let's go to our offices and check that. But if you don't find it, please feel free to ask him to send let me make it easier. Cindy, can you please, when will that report be in? Less than an hour. Remember, please don't leave your office before you check it. Can you make a copy available for the shop and by Tuesday, bring the bulk of the report to Tuesday to the meeting. The 50 details, we have it.
I don't have anything but this far, but I'm sure
Tuesday,
somebody knows.
Yeah. And Tuesday, the Cindy will bring the report.
Yeah?
She will give you today.
Yeah.
Members, thank you very much. It was a very good meeting.
Thank you.
The meeting is at. Remember that the single lunch organized by the is for you to decide. Yeah.
And even these people, you should tell them.
The people outside. So that's it.
All right.
You can come in. Yeah. And the single lunch that we are having.
Thank you.